If you do not change your behavior, then does it make your life worse? And this is just what I've realized for myself, which is I go through plenty of just like anybody else. The moment that I allow it to change what I do every day is the moment it has power over me.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
What's up, Matthew?
Hey, how's it going, Layla?
Good. How are you?
Good. So just a little background. We're a young seasonal company going into our second year. Last year, I just let a lot of slide and let people get away with a lot of moving forward, I want to run a tighter ship so we can have, like you were talking about, that vision, like people can't be doing whatever they want when I want the company going a certain direction. So how would you reculture your business and staff without completely cleaning house and starting over?
That's a great question, for one. Thank you for asking it. So changing a culture takes time. I was actually looking at this study the other day that said that it could take up to 18 months, which I think in a small business, I would say cut that in half. I think the first place that you can start is in how you measure success. So for each person on the team, how do they know whether they are successful or not?
I mean, they're basically laborers. So as long as they're delivering what they need to deliver on time and correctly, they're successful.
Are they delivering things on time and correctly?
Yeah.
Okay, so then what is the problem?
Coming in late, appearance sloppy, the late thing's not small, but it is a lot of small things that I would like to tighten up.
Understood. So I'm guessing that they do the meat of their job, maybe the, how do I put this? The, as I would call it, like administrative side of their job, they do not do well?
I would say it's mainly like being late, calling off last minute, not giving me a heads up. Like, I'm very understandable if they need a weekend off because they want to do something. But when they're telling me 2 days prior and we already took on all these orders.
Understood. So I would say two things. One, do they have it written somewhere that being on time is something that they are measured upon?
It will be. We're in the process of creating an employee handbook.
Okay, so it will be, but it's not now. Same for calling in sick. Or you taking a vacation 2 days ahead, do you have a policy around that?
No, not yet.
Okay, understandable, right? Small business. Here's the thing. If it's not written and communicated to somebody multiple times, also, here's the thing. Even if it is written and communicated multiple times, what are you doing when they're late? Like, if they're late, what happens next?
Last year, it was nothing because, like, I couldn't lose somebody and then lose 10 orders or be late. I was in a point of desperation.
Yeah.
Now that we're growing and like we actually have job applications and people applying like in surplus out, it's like I'm going to have options in the future so I see this going where I want it to go.
Yeah.
But I don't want to lose the two main guys I have now because they're good workers. I just need them to align more with the company.
I would say this, which is one, your job is to give instructions to people. If you give bad instructions or miss things that should be in the instructions, that's on you, not them. Now, if you do give them the right instructions, like it sounds like you're putting into place, and then make them aware of those instructions, that those are how they're measured on success within their job, and then they miss the instructions, the first thing that you want to make sure is this. You become their adversary when you are the one that is telling them that they messed up. What you want is that they are measuring their own success and then presenting it to you. The reason reporting in a business is very important is because it gets a person to report on their own performance, and then you get to be the person that helps them rather than the person that points it out and bugs them. And so for them, for example, there's a reason why laborers typically have a daily report, because there are a lot of little things that they do that if not done well, the business is pretty. So for example, when I worked in a gym, people who did the cleaning and people who did the restacking of the weights and little things like that, they had a sheet that they had to fill out every day. Did you come in on time? That's the first question. Did you put all the weights back? Did you miss any? Simple stuff. But if you put something like that in place for these people, and then they see over the span of a week where they have like an X versus a check, and then they have to present it to you, and you then, all you do is say, oh, what do you think of that? And then they have to tell you objectively about their performance. That is the best thing that you can do to change the culture without seeming like their enemy. Because if you just insult them, you know what I mean? Like, just like, hey, did you know that you're late? Like, why are you always late? Like, they're just going to avoid you and they're probably going to be late again because they don't want to see you. And so it's like, if when they're late, then they show up and then you yell at them, then they're like, yeah, I'm definitely going to be late again, plus like 30 minutes because he just yelled at me. So why would I want to see this guy? And so the best thing you can do is find a way for people to report on their own behavior. And then all you have to do is ask them about it.
Okay.
Now, that is the most likely way that you are going to get them to change their behavior. Now, on the other side, do not put rules in place if you do not have consequences. A consequence is not a punishment. Punishment is seeking to make somebody feel bad to get them to change their behavior. A consequence is a choice. If you do X, you get Y. If you cheat on your wife, she will leave you. It's not like she's trying to punish you. She's just like, yeah, that will happen. And so I think what you need to decide is if you have a rule in place for people, there has to be a consequence and you have to be willing to act on it despite how you feel. And so it would be better if you did not have a rule about being late than having a rule and then not having a consequence. Because our actions, if somebody's late and you just say words at them, all they know is this. This is behaviorally, like scientifically. They're late. My boss says words to me and then I can come into work the next day. Nothing has changed. But if they're late or if their buddy is late and then you say, hey, dude, one more time and you're out, right? Just want to make you aware of the consequence. Like you can choose to be late. If you choose to be late again, you also opt out of this job. I'm not going to yell at you, but I'm just making you aware of what's going to happen. And then say he's late again the next day and you're like, hey, man, you don't have a job here anymore. People then are like, oh, these consequences are real. Otherwise, they do not trust anything you say. And so I hate to say it, but at some point, unless you take action on the rules that you put in place, nobody will believe you. And then they will not be effective rules. They will just be false statements. I hope that makes sense.
It does.
If you have the fear of people leaving and it means that you are not going to make consequences for rules, then just don't have the rules. Because that's almost worse than having the rules and not doing anything.
That goes like right into my second question is, what would be the perfect balance between consequences and rewards while trying to shift the culture?
As many rewards as possible in comparison to consequences. I mean, but here's the thing. Making people aware of a consequence, you don't need to say it in a way that feels like a punishment. It's just like, hey guys, gotta let you know. Like, by the way, if you steal from the company, you don't work here. So I'll let you guys know. You don't have to say it in a way that's like awful. You know, I had a conversation with my team and I was like, hey guys, just let you know, if you like try and like take money from somebody who's like a fan so that you can like do work for them, like you can do that, but you also can't work here. So like you can do whatever you want. Just won't have a job here. They're like, yeah, that makes sense. And I was like, okay, thanks. Bye. But I would say like as a rule of thumb, like, 5 positive incidences for 1 negative. I would even go so far as like Disney says 7 to 9 positive interactions in comparison to 1 negative, which is a lot, which means avoid the negative as much as possible. The employee handbook will be huge for you because people should just, when they come on, you just state the rules of the game. And it's like, you're opting in for this game, knowing what the rules are. And now if you misstep and you play wrong, that's on you. That's not on me. I made you aware. We talked about it. You signed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be fine for anyone that comes on board now. I feel like there's just going to be a little friction at first with the people that are already on.
100%. You might turn over half the team because changing people's behavior fundamentally is hard. Someone who doesn't have the skill of being on time, tough. And so a lot of them aren't going to want to change. But that's not on you. That's also out of the scope of your job. Like, you're not the behavioral psychologist or therapist. You're their boss. So you make them aware, but there's a point at which you have to say to yourself, is this worth the return on my effort? Because if you do have a line of people out the door, man, if this person is late day after day, doesn't listen to you, is snarky, is that really the best use of your effort? No. Your time and your effort is hugely valuable to the company. And so like, it just doesn't make any sense to do that. And you might want to, because it seems like you're a really nice guy and like genuinely a good person and want to be a good leader, which I love and respect. But like, also there's a line and there is out of scope, which is like, I have tried with this person and I have a line of 20 people who would die for this job and would never allow this to happen. You have to do right by the company. And sometimes it means you do wrong, but not wrong. You have to do away with one person to do right by another 10.
Thank you, Layla.
Absolutely. Have a good one, Matthew.
You too.
Hi, Layla.
Hi, Martina. How's it going?
Good. How about you?
Good, good. Where are you out of?
Boston right now.
Oh, Boston. What's the accent? Very pretty.
Oh, yeah. From Austria. That's why.
Oh, very cool. Never been. I barely go out of the United States. Who am I kidding? So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You should go at some point. It's very nice.
Very cool. So what's your question?
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me. So I had a coaching call with my client who is an executive in a communication agency in people. And there's a question that was so perfect for today's topic. And the question would be, how would you lead your team when the company isn't doing well and you had to let go of people in the past and you find yourself in doubt and in uncertainty and still want to be a beacon of light for your team? So that's what I discussed with my client, and I would just like to know your take on this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can tell you I've definitely had to do this, especially when COVID hit, and it really dramatically affected all three of my companies because every business that we served was a brick and mortar business and most of them had to shut down. And so what I would say is that the best thing that you can do in what I would call wartime of a company, which is when it's doing poorly, is communicate it to your team. So the first thing that I would do is I would make my team aware of the change in conditions. Like, this is what was happening. This is what's happening now. What does that mean for us? And then what I did and what I always do when things change is I list out all the things that are going to change. And it's usually not huge things, but it's just like, hey, we might not put $100 towards a birthday gift anymore. Or hey, that full team meetup that we were going to do this year, because we're trying to save on money, we might not be doing that. And so I would just be as clear as possible about what has to change and what you're doing as the CEO or executive to do right by the company to get it through that hard time. And I think it's always circling back to why. And so when we had COVID and when I had to message this to my team, I told them, I was like, listen, guys, I'm trying to save every dollar proactively because I care way more about paying payroll and feeding everybody here than I do celebrating a birthday. And so if that means that we don't celebrate a birthday, we don't have a team meetup, I don't care because I'm trying to keep this business going. My job is to keep the business going. And so this is what I've got to do that. I'm going to take all measures and I'm going to go extreme. I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm just going to like, I'm going to quickly. No, I'm not going to be dainty about it. I'm not going to be careful. I'm going to go in all out. And that's what I think they should do too. If the company's doing poorly, I'll tell you what bugs the out of me. So there's a company I know doing poorly, right? Like just awful, right? And then they do this team meetup and they spend like $300,000, wow. Put themselves in the hole $300,000 to do a team meetup. And then they let me know about this. And I was like, what do you want to play rich or do you want to be rich? Do you want to play business or do you want to actually do business, man? And so that's what I would say to your client. I'd be like, if this is what's actually happening, then we need to make people grossly aware that this is happening and make them aware of how much action that we're taking to get ourselves out of this situation. Mm-hmm. You have to know. They have to know, what are you doing? Because you know what they're doing because you're the one running the company, but they don't know what you do. They have no idea. They're like, I don't know. And so list out all the things that you're doing and then update them much more frequently than usual. I would say that in times when the company is doing poorly, you need to 2 to 3x the communication that you have as the CEO or executive with the company. And so that might mean that you talk to them once a week. Now you talk to them 2 to 3 times a week. It might mean that you have a Slack channel where you just give them updates. People need to hear from the leader, especially in hard times. Think about during hard times economically, what happens? All of the best leaders rise up and they suddenly become more prominent because people are looking for leaders. They're looking for people that are sources of truth and leadership because everyone else is too scared. And so they need to make themselves available in that way for their team. State the facts, tell them what they're going to do, talk about the massive action they're going to take. Also, like, just don't sidestep. Don't let them sidestep around taking action. Everyone's always afraid, like, oh, I don't want to make them think that we're losing money. Well, you are losing money. So like, if you don't want to lose more money, let them know you're losing freaking money. And like, tell them what you're going to do and make them aware of how everything that they do contributes as well. And so I think that you do that and then you recruit the team and you let them know what they can do, which, you know, for my team, I said like, hey guys, I can't hire any more people right now. And so like, if there's any bandwidth you have, please let me know and I will give you things to do. And I swear almost 100% of the team was like, I will take on more work. I've got an hour a day. I've got 2 hours a day. I've got a weekend. And so like, it was probably the best thing that could have ever happened for our company because they absolutely came together stronger than they ever had. And I think it's a huge opportunity for your client to do the same with hers.
I love it so much when you said like, you know, present them the action list that you're doing. So, and it trickles down all to, you know, to communication and letting them know what's going on. I think that
just state the facts and tell the truth. Like the worst thing that a founder or a CEO can do is hide things. Like the only time that you hide things is when it is a legal liability for the company, right? Or when it would make things worse to acknowledge something because it's, you know, I don't know, it's just irrelevant. But for the most part, I think people just want to hear the truth. And a lot of people, I think it's also important to say, you know, during COVID, when we had all this happening, I was completely upfront. I said, I'm really sorry, but I cannot give you job security. Just being real. Like a lot of companies will just be like, hey guys, don't worry, we're not doing layoffs. And it's like, no, you know what? I'm going to be honest. I don't know. But I do know I'm going to work my ass off every hour of every day to not have to do that. And if I do, I'm going to tell you guys, I'm going to be honest about it. But like, I just don't know. I didn't know that COVID could occur. So to be like, oh, I'm never going to lay people off, I'm never going to fire people, that would be a lie. And I told them, I was like, if I have to let go of 3 people to save 100, that's a decision I have to make. I don't want to have to make that decision. So I'm doing these things now. But if that comes to it, I don't want you guys to think that I don't want you ever to be like, Lynn lied to me. Maybe she's not perfect and maybe she made decisions that you wouldn't agree with, but she's not going to lie. Don't tell people that they have job security and don't BS them because they don't appreciate that either.
Yeah, no, totally. And truth is always winning. And I think radical truth is and authenticity is what people really appreciate in the end of the day and how they remember you. So I think that's also cool.
100%. Yeah. Was that helpful for you, Martina?
Yeah, very helpful.
Hey guys, if you already don't know by now, I am actually fairly active on LinkedIn. I may go so far as to say it's actually become my favorite platform. So if you'd like to connect with me, just send me a request or hit follow. And shout out those who've been sharing my posts and tagging others.
May I ask another question or are we?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, quick. So I work a full-time corporate job and I also run a full-time business and lead my clients.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What would you say? Because my vision is to outpay my corporate salary, obviously. What would you say to people like me who are doing two things at the same time and have the long-term vision of building a business with impact? What to focus on and what are some two or three main things to what like are most important?
I think that when you're doing two things, I would say a lot of people in different aspects do two things, right? They have a job and then they have a marriage and 5 kids, or they've got kids and they've got a business, or they've got a job and a business. And I think the way to do those things at once is to figure out ways in which they can benefit each other. So what skills can you learn in your job that can carry over to your business? What things can you do in your business that can carry over to your job? I would probably be looking at it as, what more can I learn in my job that I can apply to my business until I build up enough money from the business to replace the job? That's probably the number one thing I'd be thinking about. Because if you can look at it as a tool to acquire skills while getting paid to then grow your business, I think that's a fantastic way to look at it. Now, it doesn't mean that you should like skimp out or anything. I think it's like give it your 100, but also realize like, what more can I do and what more can I get from this job that I haven't yet that then I could then take and apply to the business? Cool.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
You too.
Hi. It's so lovely to meet you.
Hi. Good to meet you too.
The thing I'm trying to figure out right now is how can I lead my team during a crisis when I'm drained and tired and have no energy left to give? And really where this comes from is that the main service that we provide for our clients is doing live streaming at events. So also hybrid events, virtual events. So like what you guys did for Alex last year, that's what we do for clients. And so inevitably there comes an event where nothing's going according to plan. Things are like problems are coming up and it's in the moment. There's a hard deadline when the event is supposed to start. It's supposed to start. Like whatever problems arise, you just got to deal with it.
Oh, I know.
So what I find is that in those situations, I used to get very like frantic when I was overwhelmed and stressed, but I worked on that. But now it's the opposite where I get so quiet. So that's kind of the problem that I'm trying to solve for, is that I just feel like, and it happened a couple of weeks ago too. So this isn't like a frequent problem, but it is something that I've noticed where I'm not showing up for my team in the way that I want to be because I'm like tired in my own kind of like bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
Why is it a problem?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, is it a problem in the first place to solve for?
I don't know. Does your team, have they told you that you're tired and that you seem stressed?
I think it's a very obvious difference in my demeanor between how I am normally versus in those situations.
That's fair. Okay. But have you asked them?
Yes. I've asked a couple.
No.
And they said no. Like, they're like, oh yeah, we're just crazy. It's not a big deal. That's just how it is.
The first thing I would do is I would honestly ask the team, you know, and I'll say this because I've run a lot of big team meetings, team meetups. And there's been times where maybe I didn't feel like I showed up like I normally did for my team. And then I go back and I ask my team, or I even send them a survey to fill out anonymously about me and my performance. And everyone's like, no, what are you talking about? I didn't notice anything. And so the only reason I say that is because sometimes how we feel inside is not reflected externally, but we are not aware of that. And so that's the first thing I would say. The second thing is that if they do notice, it's really great for you to see that. And so I think it'd be very meaningful for you to see how your presence during these times affects your team. And I think that a lot of them would probably really appreciate a leader who asks them about the impact that their attitude has on the rest of the team. And I also think that you seeing that data written out would be a strong motivator to change your behavior. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. I think
that's
you're
the first
right.
thing I would say.
I had asked for feedback, but it was general. It wasn't specific.
Yeah. You've got to call out the incidents. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to know every teammate, they're going to try and buffer something they give you. So it's just like, make it, I always like say, like, it's probably two times worse than they tell me because they don't want to like hurt your feelings or whatever, because it seems like you're well-intended. So that's the first thing I would do. The second thing I would say is, why are you quiet? What happened to make you not want to talk? Someone else say something?
No, that's a good, I had never thought of it that way, of what happened that made me not want to talk. I think so far, it's just when I was a kid, I used to be super quiet and super shy. And I think I'm still in that, like, and like, I've worked on that, but I don't think I've like got rid of it 100%. So I think that's just what I'm used to doing.
So it sounds like in certain circumstances or situations, you tend to be more quiet than others. And this is a new circumstance or situation. And so you're defaulting to a behavior that you have done more in the past, which makes a lot of sense. So what is something that you could do to make it easier for you to speak up during those times?
I think it's something I'll have to think on and get feedback from the team and dive into it. Because what you said about like what made me not want to talk in those situations, I haven't thought of it that way. So
well,
that's really
and helpful. I only asked what happened to make you not want to talk, not why. Like, I don't need a child. You know what I mean? Here's the thing. You can find something to do to prompt yourself. So for example, if I have, during a live event, we always have team huddles happening throughout them where we sync up and just talk about what's going on. You force yourself to talk. So you have a commitment, you have a responsibility to talk, and the team is expecting it. Right now, you don't place that responsibility upon yourself. And so you need to find something to make yourself responsible for that then forces you to talk. It could be that you have a quick 5-minute huddle up with the team and you just talk about what's happening, and you even could make a script for yourself ahead of time. But it's like you need a prompt so that you now are going to train yourself in those situations to communicate with your team. And it's not just going to be that you're going to show up and you're going to be like, yeah, I'm going to do it. It's like, no, we need to have a plan and we need to commit to the plan. We need to be like at 12 o'clock, no matter what's happening with these damn live event, we huddle up for 5 minutes and I'm going to lead that huddle. And here's how I'm going to show up.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really great. Is there, because it's really like in the moment, because I'm at the point where I'm aware it's happening. And like halfway through the event, I realize like I'm being really quiet. And then it's that, okay, what do I do about it part that I'm now kind of trying to figure out, like, what can I do to prompt myself, like you said. So,
well, it sounds like it's fairly recent. You've become aware of it. Now you do need to prompt yourself. I think scheduling a prompt is useful. I think the next thing that you could do is some people to prompt themselves, do something different. Like you could, I mean, it sounds weird, but like I used to have glasses on my desk and it was like, every time I put on my glasses, it was like, this is leadership Layla. And I just go in, it was like, that's the cue. And so it could be a pair of earrings. It could be a hat. It could be glasses. Anything that reminds you that you need to start going into like, now I'm putting on, it's almost like you're playing a character. And it's like, this is the character I need to play right now, which is like, I was going to like make some play with your name, but I don't have one that rhymes at the end. So I don't know, Chatty Nicole. so I would just say like anything that can prompt you to make a change in your behavior would be good to start with. Like, what do you do when you remain quiet? Do you go into a different room than your team? Do you get on your phone? Like, you're not just quiet. You're doing something else rather than talking. So that something else could be a reminder to talk. Is it that you look at your phone, make the background of your phone, go talk to your team? And you could say, sounds stupid, it'll work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. That actually helps a lot. It's like a completely different way of thinking about it compared to what I was thinking about it before. So,
well, good. I hope you found something useful.
Thank you so much.
We got like 5 minutes, so I'm going to pull up a couple questions.
I have sleep issues, which makes it hard to be motivated because I physically don't have energy. Is that just me being lazy, or do I need to fix that first before I even try and grow my business? Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think a lot of people, one, I'll just say, I think a lot of people that run businesses, start businesses, put themselves in these situations, have a hard time relaxing. And I think in order to sleep, you have to relax, which is a passive activity. I myself have definitely gone through times where I've been up most of the night or I've woken up incredibly early. It's just kind of something that I have learned comes with my level of responsibility. I would say this, I wouldn't identify as being lazy. I would say that there's two things and two angles you can hit, and it just depends on who you are. And I would say, like, is it physiological or psychological? From a psychological perspective, I think that a lot of people, when they don't get an adequate amount of sleep, then stress themselves out about that in general, and it spirals. So it's like they stress themselves out about it. And then when they go to bed at night and they lay down, and then they start to feel stressed about the fact that they're not asleep yet. And then they feel stressed, which elevates your cortisol system, which then you stay up longer. And so if that's you and you identify with that, then I think taking action in the opposite direction would be helpful, which is trying to stay up rather than trying to go to bed, setting an alarm for early rather than not setting one because you're afraid you won't get enough rest. And so I would say it would be like leaning into the paradox of the activity, because you cannot try to relax. It is a passive activity. And so I have seen that, and I've for myself understood that if I try to force something like that, it makes it harder for it to happen. And so I would go in the opposite direction and try to create conditions in which it wouldn't happen. And then you actually teach yourself that it's not something to be scared of, and it's not something to stress out over. And then you will realize that you will relax and then eventually go to bed. Now, on the other side, if you say like, okay, no, it's physiological, I'm not an expert on that. So I don't know much about that in general. In terms of, do I need to fix it before I grow my business? I think that this is just my stance on anything. If you're going through anything hard, if you've got cancer, if somebody died, if there's anything happening in your life, if you do not change your behavior, then does it make your life worse? And this is just what I've realized for myself, which is I go through plenty of just like anybody else. The moment that I allow it to change what I do every day is the moment it has power over me. This is why, you know, when I was young and I used to see like heroes of mine show up, I had a guy who he was a hero of mine, and he showed up at an event the day after open heart surgery. And everyone said, why would you do that? Why did you do that? And he was like, I will not allow the sickness to dictate what I do with my life. Why is it that you see Kobe Bryant show up after vomiting and having a fever of 105 the night before, and he's playing on the court? And it's the reason for that is because if you do not allow any sort of adverse, I would say, situation or condition in your life to affect what you do, then how much does it affect your life? And then is it really even a problem? And so for me, there are plenty of times where I have things happen that I do not want to have happen that greatly affect, from what anyone would say, probably my ability to perform, but I still do it anyway. And that's just my personal choice. What it does at least is that I'm not scared of any adversity. because I know that I will show up regardless of how I feel, regardless of whatever condition I am in, I will show up. And in that, I have a lot of trust in myself. Now, this is not, again, I'm not like a doctor, health person, anything like that. So please don't, I'm not taking it that way. I'm just talking about adverse conditions in general. If you allow them to dictate your behavior and allow them to change your life for the worse, they do not automatically change your life for the worse. You allow them to. And so for me, I would rather live a life where I do show up, you know, I would say like feeling unmotivated, incredibly stressed, whatever it may be, but I still stick to my commitments and do what I need to do to reach my goals because it gives me more trust and confidence in myself. And so for me, that's more important than anything. And maybe it'll resonate with you. Do we have another question? The most famous leaders who enforce a culture of excellence and are notoriously mean. Is this necessary? I think actually those leaders are popular because they are mean. It's not that all leaders that enforce excellence are mean. It's that the ones who are have a very polarizing personality and gain notoriety because of that. And so I happen to know way more leaders of enormous billion-dollar companies that are very kind and they are very positively affirming of people on their teams. Now they are driven, they are hungry, they work very hard, but they are not mean. And so that's the one thing I will say is I think that the reason they are known is because they are anomalies. And I would say on the other side of that, they probably have a very large group of people surrounding them who are all very kind and lead out of, I would say, like positivity rather than negativity. The next thing we'll say is that both work. So whether you like it or not, punishing people works. That's why companies do it. Anyone that follows my stuff or has for some time knows that I'm not an advocate of that. But that's because I don't want to create that condition for people. I think that it degrades people's quality of life, and I do not want to contribute to that. I also just am not that person. I've never been a mean person ever in my life. So it just would be the opposite of who I am. But it works. And so that's why companies do it. And, okay, let's consider this. It is so easy to yell at somebody. But what are all these people getting on my live asking me? What are you guys asking? You're like, how do I change my culture but not hurt people's feelings? Why is it that people default to punishment? Because it's much easier. You need far less skills to punish somebody than you do to learn how to give somebody proper feedback to change their behavior. And so few people have the fundamentally like baseline skills to even do it. So the reason that a lot of people use punishment is because think about the amount of like management there is in all of the businesses across the country. Walk into a gas station, walk into a Subway or McDonald's, whatever. Tell me if you think that manager has the base level of skill to use positive reinforcement to change a culture. You're probably like, no. And that's why. And like, it's not something I like. It's not something I think is great, but like, it's just the truth. It's just like, it requires more skills to use positive reinforcement to grow a culture of excellence than it does to yell at people. And so that's why people yell at people, because they have less skills or they're less intelligent or both. And it's easier for them. Guys, thank you for tuning in today. I appreciate all of you. Great freaking questions and excited for the next one.